No, actually, he's much pickier.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
It's so nice to see your face. I wasn't in studio last week.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I felt remote. Like a long time.
It did. Thank you for my lovely cupcakes.
Oh, my God. I'm
Kelly.
So
She's
proud
so
of
sweet.
You.
So I decided that I was going to try to get licensed in a couple of different states. And so you have to take these different exams. So it's a jurisprudence exam. And so me, the crazy person that I am, you know my crazy
yes.
exam stories. I downloaded all the materials. I read them all yesterday. I took half the test last night and half the test this morning, and I passed.
It's amazing. Well, it was so funny because you texted me and you're like, yeah, I'm thinking about taking this exam, you know. And, you know, I'm not telling a lot of people just in case, you know, I don't pass. And then, like, this morning you're like, I passed. I was like, what? I was like, you took it? It was amazing.
But
so.
You were my inspiration.
Oh, my God.
You passed yours.
Oh, you're so
and
cute.
You brought me cupcakes and you sent me all those beautiful lotions.
Oh, my God.
You're so sweet. You're such a good friend.
That's how I feel about you. I really do.
Okay. Did you get taxes done?
Yes. Today's
officially the due date.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We're a little bit crazy about it. Or should I say my husband's a little crazy about it. So we got it done quite a bit before, which is nice. Like, I feel like our accountant loves us because it's like, oh, yeah, the Millers, they're good, you know? Like,
that's so cute. You know, I always try, but I have all these different investments and stuff, and they sometimes don't send out the reports and things like that until, you know, the end of March.
The 11th hour.
Yeah. So I don't think my accountant is all that fond of me because I got I did get mine in a week and a half early, so that's not too
bad. Oh, that's
bad.
Good. That's
yeah.
good.
Yeah. So what, did you have a good weekend?
So I had a really good weekend. Yeah, I was... It's very funny. So everybody knows my younger son's obsession with food. And so he's 4 and a half. And I'm not much of a cook, but I was pretty proud because I made some roasted potatoes. Just cut them up, put olive oil and salt. And this is like gourmet for me.
Yes,
just FYI. So I made it and he's like, yum. And he's like, Mom, how did you make this? Like, he really was like invested. Like, he really wanted to know. And I was like, I looked at him. I'm like, you're going to be a chef. Like, I could just see it. And then I told him about the olive oil. He's like, I like olive oil. Like, he's just what 4-year-old, you know, like, says this? It's really funny.
He's such a trip.
Trip. Really, and then the older one, I have to bribe with lottery tickets to sleep through the night. That's where we are. I always thought I'd never be like the mom who bribed. Oh, no. I'm giving it away like hotcakes. Like, literally, you want a lottery ticket? If I get my sleep, it's worth it.
Of course. Didn't he win $200 at a lottery ticket already?
He won $200 on a $30 lottery ticket. Don't ask. He wanted to use his own money for this. So he buys. And then he won. And now he's, like, completely jaded and thinks that, like, everybody wins. It's so funny. So, but, you know, I buy them like the $1 or $2 scratchers, and that satisfies.
Do you know those machines that they have like at bowling alleys and things where it has the big claw?
Oh, sure.
50 cents and you can drop down
yes.
and try to get this. So I was out with the lady who sits for my cats. She used to be my trainer also.
Uh-huh.
So we went out for ice cream with her daughter, and we went into Toys R Us, and they had one of those machines. So her mom gave her a couple dollars of quarters uh-huh. to play with this. She gets it on the first one,
oh.
the very first one. And she goes, I don't like that one, and drops it.
No.
No, right now. Wait. So we're both like, our mouths drop open. So, do you understand? This is never going to happen again.
Yeah.
And so that little bugger, uh-huh. 2 tries later, got another one.
No way.
No one ever wins at that thing.
No, actually, I was just going to say, Remy's really good at it,
really?
Too. I don't know what it is. I can't seem to figure it out. And even better, we went to Great Wolf Lodge, and they have the big hanging prizes.
Yeah.
I think I might have said this. Polaroid camera, like the new kind.
Yeah.
And you have to pop a balloon, but it's like, it's very complicated. They don't make it easy. David does it on the first try. We almost died.
I
think it is possible, but it's extremely rare. That's
amazing.
Really funny that she dropped it. That like kills me.
All right. So last week we had a great guest. That was Dr. Gail Saltz. And she wrote a book called The Power of Different. And it was really interesting to, you know, hear her perspective on how you can be, the two sides of the same coin almost, right? Mm-hmm. Like genius can look odd. Odd yes. can look genius, right? Yes. I mean, it was interesting. Then all about embracing differences.
Which, I thought it was so great. Yeah, it was really interesting. And I loved how she was saying like another person's like disability is another person's sort of strength. Treasure and yeah. strength, you yeah. know? So it was really cool. It was really great to have her on.
It's like garage sales. I consider them to be garbage sales.
Yes.
They're other people's treasures.
It's so true.
Although have you ever gotten anything good at a garage sale?
I think it's rare. Let me think if I've ever gotten anything really good. I tend to be the seller rather than the sellee. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You too or no?
Yeah, I once got a pair of beautiful pillows. Not pillows to sleep on, but
yeah,
throw
like
pillows.
Like decorated
pillows. I just bought them, and I guess they didn't like the color scheme. The tags were all on. They were
oh
brand
my God.
New. Like 50 cents a piece. They were great.
That's good.
I know. Okay, we have a very exciting couple of guests today, so I'm going to allow you to do the introduction since you're the one who found them.
Yes, I'm so, so excited. So we're going to be speaking today with Jennifer Mirsky, who's an impact producer, and Tracy, and I'm going to butcher her last name, Penny Kewick, and she's a retired lieutenant colonel for the U.S. Army. And both of these wonderful women are going to talk about the movie that they helped make called Prison Dogs. And it's a story about love, loss, and redemption. Prison Dog focuses on the impact of a unique dog training program that gives two of the most marginalized populations in our society, prison inmates and veterans, a second chance. The documentary follows three inmates serving long-term sentences for murder and armed robbery who have been selected to participate in a program that trains service dogs for veterans with PTSD. The powerful relationship between humans and animals restores the lives of those who are physically and figuratively imprisoned. It's a story of hope and the power of a second chance.
Welcome. Ladies. Hello.
You guys there?
We're here.
Okay.
You fall asleep over there or what?
Nope. Yes. We're listening to your wonderful description. It's accurate.
Wow. I am so curious. Like, what inspired, what are your backgrounds and individual histories that would inspire your passion for this kind of movie?
Sure. I'll jump in. I'm Jennifer, and I used to work, I kind of did all different types of media. I did print and then television, and then went back to grad school for digital media. But I really spent a lot of years working with Bill Moyers and documentary television. And so I kind of came full circle. And now I'm doing what they call impact producing. And so there's a lot of outreach and digital media and social media and really continuing the conversation with the audience after the film credits roll. And so this is just a project that is really up my alley because aside from working with incredible directors, Perry Peltz and Geeta Ganbir, aside from that, I am a lover of dogs. And I have my own puppy who hopefully will stay silent during this radio show. And yeah, it's just it's such an important film and the best kind of feel good. It's a documentary. But it really is remarkable to see the difference that these puppies make for the inmates and also for the veterans.
That's beautiful. And how about you, Tracy? What's your background?
So I have absolutely no idea how to make a film. and people ask me, how did you get involved? I got kind of pressured into it by Puppies Behind Bars because I had applied for the dog, had been approved for the dog, and they said, oh, we're doing this documentary. You either are in the documentary or you have to wait 6 months for your dog. Oh. So I said, well, I guess I'm in the documentary. so that was kind of kind of way I got in there, not understanding that documentary means real raw footage, no retakes, and it's in prison. So, yeah, you have to be really comfortable in your own skin.
What was it like to, how many days did you spend actually in the prison? Was all the filming done inside the cells?
No. In fact, Puppies Behind Bars, the inmates that are the puppy raisers are inmates that have spent 2 years without any violations. They are on their best behavior. The process to get into the program is very extensive. You can't have anyone who has had any kind of violence towards women, violence towards animals, mm-hmm. and no issues within the prison population themselves. So they actually have a classroom, and we would walk to the classroom through the general areas getting into prison. And we were there 16 days working with the puppy raisers, learning how to work with our dogs.
Wow. I can just imagine. God, what I would have loved to be behind the scenes. It's just so neat.
Yeah, and both Kelly and I are...
No, just to key off of that for a minute, one of the more interesting things I think that Perry and Gita did was, even though they had incredible access to the prison and everything, it also was limited just by nature of it being a prison, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so there was an interval of time. So they, in other words, they couldn't be there every single day filming. And so what they did is they had the inmates keep a journal.
Mm.
Oh, so that, that way they could kind of fill in the dots, connect the dots, fill in the blank, et cetera, when they came back to film. So I thought that was a really interesting way to approach this.
This is incredible. So Deborah was saying that we both have an obsession with animals.
Yes.
And my dog is actually a therapy dog also. And they just, I mean, you're preaching to the choir. I just think they are the most magical creatures, so healing. I mean, I bring the dog to my son's elementary school, and it's just such a difference. And I was saying also in the last show that they even have like an animal program at my son's school for, you know, developing social skills. And I think this is so wonderful. So maybe if you can tell us a little bit about sort of what you've seen in the differences with both the prisoners and the veterans after the program.
Sure. I'll talk a little bit about the inmates, but then Tracy, of course, can speak directly about the experience of being a veteran with the service dog. Basically, it's really, what's incredible about it is that, you know, these are, we don't want to call them hardened criminals, but let's just say that they are not in prison for trivial matters. And yet these men become so emotionally attached to these dogs.
Aww.
And it is so much work. I mean, first of all, just to even do the program, they're already kind of making themselves stand out in prison, you know, and that's a big time commitment, and you don't really necessarily want to stand out in prison. And then the puppies live with them in their cells for 2 to 3 years. So it is a 24/7 situation.
Wow.
And really, you know, Gloria Gilbert Stoga, who runs Puppies Behind Bars, she is a force of nature, and she does not suffer fools gladly. So she really teaches them accountability, responsibility. She demands so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they really gain life skills from that, but then they also gain career skills. And I have met some of them since they have been released from prison, and they're gainfully employed. They're still training dogs.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's really kind of remarkable. So that's the, you know, that's what I've seen in terms of the impact on the service dogs for the inmates. And Tracy can explain what it's like to have one of these service dogs and how it changed her life.
So I've had Murphy for now 3 years. First of all, the training itself is an eye-opener, because you're dealing with PTSD, dealing with multiple meds from the VA, you're going to the hotel without any of your family support, so that in and of itself is a challenge. And then you're going into prison, which I've never been in an American prison. I've actually been in an Iraqi and Afghan prison, which are no picnic either.
Oh my.
But you have that kind of preconceived notion of what an inmate that you're going to encounter in prison is like. But the puppy raisers are completely not what you expect. They're so enthusiastic. They are so well educated on puppy raising, on the dogs. They do their research on PTSD as well. They're very empathetic, and their main goal is to see you become very successful with your dog. Even though it's coming at such a personal sacrifice to them, they're giving up their, you know, their pal and their buddy for 2.5 years. They really do want to see you be successful with your dog. So they work very hard with you to, you know, learn the little tricks and to, you know, find patience and not be too hard on yourself as you're going through training. Because as Jennifer said, Gloria is really tough because you don't want her dogs just to go to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of this interesting challenge. But the prisoners, you know, if you put prisoners and veterans in the same sentence, you kind of wouldn't think there was any commonality, but there's a tremendous amount of commonality between the two groups, and we actually bonded really well. It's funny because I've seen them now since they've been released from prison, and it's like we're old long lost friends, which mm-hmm. is wonderful. And the dogs respond accordingly. You know, they all have a special name for their dog. Murphy's name was Mimi. If I call her Mimi, she looks at me like she's mildly interested. If her puppy raiser calls her Mimi, she goes nuts. So it's interesting that, you know, they have that little bond and she gets hugs and kisses and she's very excited. And then she knows, okay, it's time to go back to mom.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real interesting relationship that we have. And they give up so much, but it allows them to also gain skills so that when they go back into society, they can become, you know, contributing members of society. And they do. There has been no one from the class that I went through. All those prisoners are now out. They are all successfully reintegrated back with their families, and they're all doing well, and they're all gainfully employed.
That's so remarkable. Amazing. So remarkable.
It's a great sign. I mean, it's a great step in the right direction.
So I want to make sure that I totally understand this, and maybe for our listeners too. So these puppies first come from where? Where is it? A breeder, or are they? Were they abandoned dogs? So like, where did they come from?
The puppies I have, and that are. The dog that I have and the dogs that are in the documentary were from different breeders across the country. The program used to buy the dogs from various breeders. They've now changed that, and they have now gone in-house and have their own breeding program.
Uh-huh.
At 8 weeks, those puppies are given to an inmate, uh-huh. and their training is 24/7. And as you can see in the film, you know, you're expected to have sleepovers. You're expected to give your dog to other handlers so that the dog is very well socialized.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog can act in many different situations.
So multiple prisoners may have their hands on one puppy, or is that not how it works?
Yes. You'll have a primary raiser, but then maybe the puppy might have a sleepover with, you know, inmate A, B, or C. So, yeah, there's a lot of it certainly takes a village, and that's very difficult for these puppy raisers, because in prison you're very isolated. You keep to yourself. You don't want to, you know, kind of build any kind of group setting. But they do. They work together as a team. They support each other.
I was going to say that's probably a really good socializing and bonding experience for the inmates themselves, having to cooperate with someone else who they would usually see as an antagonist.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And you see some of the prisoners don't do well with it, and some don't take the corrective criticism, and those prisoners don't stay in the program very long.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to have a complete dedication, because it's hard work.
Yeah.
You know, they're all cute and cuddly the first couple months, but then, you know, when they're getting to that stage where they're being defiant and they're not wanting to listen and you really have to work with them,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's hard.
Yeah, the teething stage, I can imagine, is not no picnic.
I was going to be silly. Are you talking about the prisoner or the puppy?
Both.
It's really both, funny.
For sure, for sure. And well, what variety of puppies? Are there certain breeds that are better suited for this type of program than others? I would imagine that because different kinds of dogs have different personalities.
So my dog was the last GLAB they have, and she is part Labrador and part Golden Retriever, and she's called the GLAB. Now they just do traditional Labradors.
Okay.
They find that they're easiest to, you know, train.
I see. Yeah. No,
okay. Oh, so it is definitely that breed.
Yes.
Labrador.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they're such a loving, wonderful. That's Tiffany's dog, my daughter's dog, Missy. She's primarily a lab with a little bit of golden in her. So sweet. Oh my God, they're so sweet.
So I have a question. When the prisoners have to give the dogs to the veterans, what is that like? I can imagine there's a grieving with that, even though they know ahead of time that they obviously are doing this for a purpose.
So,
really, everyone,
yeah.
Oh, sorry, Jennifer. I didn't mean to talk over you.
No, not at all. You should definitely talk about it, Tracy, and then I can explain what happened at the premiere, which was interesting. But Tracy obviously was there when the inmates had to turn the dogs over to the veterans. Yeah.
So we don't get matched up with a dog right away. You spend a couple hours each day with a different dog, and then every night you take a dog back to your hotel room.
Wow. That's great.
So there's a lot of, you know, they're trying to see how you interact.
Puppy is trying to say hello.
That's not perfect. That was kind of like, how come I don't get to go play with the ball?
Yeah, he's like, I'm not getting enough attention. Come on.
Exactly. Meanwhile, Murphy's like passed out on the bed like, oh, don't wake me up. So what happens is you work with these dogs and the staff watches how you interact with them. And they see what works, what doesn't work. Actually, my first interaction with Murphy was horrible. She was tired. Aww. She'd been with the two other veterans earlier that day. She didn't want to do anything for me. I was in tears. She was not happy. And then they said, oh, we're going to match you with Murphy. And I thought, you people are insane. Like, we don't work well together. But they really do know what they're doing. Murphy and I are joined at the hip now. We're a great team. But when the end, it's bittersweet for the inmates because they know they're giving them up and they want them to go, obviously, but then they are giving up their buddy and their friend. Mm-hmm. They do get another dog, but I have to be honest with you. I don't know that I could give up a dog that I had trained for a year and a half.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they do it, and I think that's probably the biggest gift that the veterans get is that we get a beautiful dog.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Absolutely. God, yeah, because I had a friend whose mother did Guiding Eyes for the Blind, and so she trained a puppy in her home. I guess it was, you know, a year or two. And then if the puppy passed the course, then she gives it to someone who is blind. And if the puppy doesn't pass, then they get to keep it. And so it's sort of this you know, situation. It's like you kind of don't want them to pass because it's like you want to keep the puppy, but you want them to pass because you want to be able to give it on. So I can completely relate.
Exactly. I was just going to say it was really amazing at the Tribeca Film Festival where the film premiered, because one of the former inmates was reunited with the dog that he had raised, and also of course he saw the veteran Mark Beam who the dog had gone to, and you know, let's just say he was wiping his eyes. It was the dog went crazy to see him. The dog had not seen him for 2 years.
Oh wow! Oh, it's still remembered.
That's amazing. Beautiful. Yeah,
animals are so special.
They really. Oh my gosh!
So special. So, what would be a typical training day for the prisoner in terms of taking care of a puppy? What would that look like?
So the puppies live in the cells on this special wing with the prisoner. They get them up in the morning. They've got to find a guard to let them out so the dogs can use the bathroom. The dogs go to breakfast with them. They go to the bathroom with them. They go, if they have a job within the prison system, they have to go to the job with them. They go to every meal. They go outside twice a day for, you know, rec playtime, designated playtime for the dog. If they're taking any night classes or any continuing education classes, they go to class with them. Mm. And then they have needed time where they work specifically with the dog on their tasks, but it is 24/7 with that dog. It's not like you're, hey, I'm bored, I'm going to leave you in my crate, or I want to go take a smoke break. You got to take the dog with you.
Yeah.
So they are attached at the hip, which, you know, when you think about it, is pretty crazy that you take your dog to the bathroom, but it's good because then when you're out in public, Murphy knows, you know, how to wait while I go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of life skills that she needs to know. So it does work.
Wow. And do other prisoners tease these prisoners who are doing the program? Do they bully them? Do they have sort of like a silent respect for them? I'm just kind of curious if you've noticed any of that dynamic.
There is a little bit why are you talking to your puppy that way? A little, I want to say a little bit of jealousy maybe.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The prison guards will tell you, the correctional officers will tell you that it adds a dynamic of humanity to the prison. Mm. And it's funny because I got to know some of the prison or the correctional officers, and then when I had to go back and bring Murphy back for a week while I had surgery, and they were like, "Oh, Murphy, so good to see you." And they all know them, and you know, it creates conversation between the prisoners and the correctional officers, other than behavioral and social issues. So it's kind of nice to have this commonality, and I think it makes them a little bit more human. But I think there's a lot of jealousy from other prisoners that are not in the program, because they get to live, if you're in the program, you get to live on your own wing, you have a little bit more responsibility, a little bit more freedom.
That makes sense. Can you speak, Tracy, a little bit about the PTSD and how Murphy has helped you with that specifically?
So Murphy is trained in 90 commands, 10 of which are specific to PTSD. But for me, the biggest thing at night was the night terrors and the nightmares. Yeah. They were, I was having up to 60 a month. So I took this incredible regimen of drugs to try to keep the nightmares at bay and allow me to sleep, none of which were working. So Murphy is trained to sense a nightmare coming on, and she originally turned on the light and pulled off the covers to wake me up.
Oh my God.
And adapted that a little bit, where she just gets in bed with me and will snuggle with me, and that's enough for me to go back to sleep.
I'm in tears.
Oh my God. So sweet.
That is so beautiful.
We're dying over here. We're waterworks. We are. Oh my God.
That is just
she's amazing. If I were to have like a panic attack, she knows when they're coming. I don't know how she knows, probably because, you know, your heart rate goes up and, you know, you start breathing differently. But if I'm in public and I'm having a panic attack, she will physically, you know, lean into me so that all of my attention goes to her and it'll dissipate panic attack a lot quicker than if I didn't have her. She alerts me if someone's coming up behind me, like in a store or when we're out in public, so I don't have that startle reaction. She can block herself. She puts herself between me and someone who's entering my personal space, so I don't feel like I'm being crowded out or kind of, I have that spatial orientation that's so important when you have PTSD. So yeah, she does a lot of different things, but that's kind of her biggest thing, is the nightmares at night. That was, I just could not, medicine wasn't working. So that has helped tremendously to get a good night's rest.
That is remarkable. Just absolutely remarkable.
And Tracy, I don't, I'm sorry if you said this, but you know, just your the amount of medication has really changed for you after having Murphy in your life.
Yeah, I went from 13 to a dog.
13 medications to a dog?
That's incredible.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Murphy. So it's been, you know, that's a game changer in and of itself, just being off all the meds that make you feel really groggy and just unable to cope, or you kind of don't even really want to cope because you're just kind of the zombie. So that has helped tremendously, just getting off all the meds.
Who knew that the canine world would replace psychotherapists? We're done, Kelly. We might as well just, you just got licensed.
More like psychiatrists, yeah.
We might as well just pack it in. I mean, well, because I work with PTSD.
Not exactly. It's replaced talk therapy. And I think that's something that you have to caution on as well, is, you know, she's not the end all. She is a tool in my toolbox of PTSD. But I do continue therapy. I do warrior yoga. I'm not one size fits all. I continue to seek those therapies that help.
That's great.
But she is a big part of my healing.
Sure. Have you ever tried EMDR?
Since I don't know what it is, I guess not.
EMDR is eye movement desensitization reprocessing, which was a technique that was developed for people who were war vets. And it's basically alternating stimulation of the brain through watching a light bar. It's really fascinating. I'm happy to give you some more information on that later on. It's one of the methods that I practice because I work with a lot of people with PTSD, and it can be pretty phenomenal. Yeah.
But I, you know what I love hearing? That you do so many different modalities. Because it's true. Because it's like in one moment, you know, one thing might work, but the next day it might not work. So it's so smart to have other tools that you're very familiar with at your fingertips, just knowing. Because, you know, nothing's going to work 100% of the time. So I really love that you mentioned that.
And Tracy, can you give us a little bit of background of where you served and for how long, and you know, maybe a little bit of those details, if you don't mind?
Sure. I've actually served in the military for 26 years.
Wow.
I was an Army helicopter pilot. I flew Black Hawks. So I was
impressive.
In Desert Storm as a young lieutenant, and then had assignments all over the U.S. as well as Korea. And then I ended up in Iraq and Afghanistan back-to-back. And actually didn't have trauma in the air, but had hit an IED in Afghanistan.
Mm. Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my. You're an impressive person. I can
yes.
tell you that. I don't think I want to arm wrestle with you.
Not because it's like, really? Whatever.
What's that?
We
my kids
that.
Are a lot less impressed.
Oh. Well, they just can't be impressed at this point. How old are they?
26, 25, 19, and 18.
Oh, my
And they
God.
Haven't come to be impressed yet?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Send them to me. I'll
I was
have
just,
a talk with
exactly.
them.
Exactly. Yeah. Tell them to call in. We'll set them straight. Oh, wow. And so how do they react with the dog, your kids?
So they, as is shown in the film, my second oldest daughter is home during the filming. And, you know, they were kind of like, a dog, really, Mom? Like, seriously, we had a Labrador. And the dog has completely changed all of our lives. Mm-hmm. She's very much a part of our lives. They all love her to death, but they are just astounded at the changes in me individually and then the impact it's had on our family. And I think for a lot of it, it's been my children's healing as well, because mm-hmm. they've endured, you know, multiple deployments for myself. My husband's also a combat veteran, his deployment. So I think it's been a great healing tool for all of us.
Yes, that's awesome.
I love what your daughter says in the film, where she says something like, you know, we thought it was just a dog. It's not just a dog.
Not just a dog.
You know, and just how much calmer Gracie is.
It's a complete game changer as far as, you know, just quality of life. And that translates to their quality of life as well.
I'm curious, who designed, or what's the background of the organization that developed a program to teach dogs about how to help with symptoms of PTSD? So that doesn't seem like a common training program at Petco, you know?
Is that Puppies Behind Bars, or is that something, in addition?
That's Puppies Behind Bars, and it's really the brainchild of Gloria Gilbert Stoga.
Mm-hmm.
And what's kind of amazing is I think she had not been a dog trainer.
Wow.
I think she may have, Tracy, am I right that she started out with like guided dogs for the blind maybe, but she has the perfect personality for this. So it's kind of extraordinary that she hasn't spent her career doing this.
Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah.
A lot of trial by error, and they've made mistakes, but they learn from their mistakes. And she just kind of goes from there. She is an amazing woman that, you know, she recognized that there would be a need for PTSD dogs, and she's constantly getting feedback. She's constantly adapting the training as she learns more and more from both veterans and the mental health community on what works and what doesn't work.
I'd be like the worst trainer because I have no discipline. Like I'm like, oh, it's okay. They pooped in the middle. It's okay. They're so cute. Like, I'd be like the worst. I think you do. You have to have a certain personality.
You do, and you have to be fair and consistent.
Yeah.
You know, it's so crucial. I mean, because otherwise the dog just doesn't learn. I was just going to say as well, if you'll allow me to make a little plug for the digital places that people can go.
Sure, please.
To read more about this. You know, you were impressed with the dog. We actually have video from a CBS segment that was done where you actually see a veteran from the film reenact, you know, being in trouble, falling down to the ground, and the dog goes up to the wall and literally takes the phone receiver off the hook to call 911 and goes and sits down with the veteran until help comes.
Oh.
And this is something that we have on our Facebook page. So, you know, we're Prison Dogs Film. So we're that on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and then more information at prisondogsfilm.com. So yeah, that just blew me away. It just
and how many films?
And by the way, that dog had not practiced that recently.
Wow!
And it remembered the command.
Oh!
And how many film festivals have you been in with this film?
Over, Over 20.
It's incredible.
Probably closer to almost even 25. Yeah, it's been a real festival darling, I have to say. And I can say this because I was not the director. So it won two prizes. It won the grand prize for Best Feature Documentary at the Flickers Rhode Island Film Festival, and then the award for Best Director for the Global Cinema Film Festival. So audiences have just loved it.
That's and great.
Congratulations.
Find it really moving.
When was it made?
Really over a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
It premiered in 2016, but it had been a couple of years, partially for that reason that I described, which is that the filmmakers could not get access, constantly to the prison. Yeah.
And is there any hope that this will be in the major theaters or in some other form that people could go see it?
You know, at this point, there is digital distribution. So what that means in regular speak is that it can be seen on iTunes and Amazon Video, which is great. And the easiest way to do that is if someone goes to prisondogsfilm.com, we have a button that says watch. And then there's a list of links. And so it's really easy. So that's the good news. Anyone can watch it from their computer.
Oh, that's incredible.
That's very exciting. Very exciting. So are there other documentaries that you have in the works?
Oh, yes. The filmmakers they never sit idly by. And one of them, Perry Peltz, has a film coming out that's premiering at this year's Tribeca Film Festival called Warning, This Drug May Kill You, all about the opioid crisis.
Wow.
And that's very powerful. And that will be on HBO on May 1st, premiering at 10 p.m. And Geeta Ganbir also has a film at the Tribeca Film Festival, which she's done with the actress whose name I can never pronounce, Mariska Hargitay, called I Am Evidence.
And what's that about? Do you know?
I do know, but I'm actually going to call it up because I'm going to tell you exactly how it's cast before I misspeak. So come back to me in one second because I had nothing to do with that film.
Yeah, no, in the meantime.
Yeah, people would know her from SVU, right? Here we go. Okay, I'm going to give you the exact description. Every year thousands of rape kits containing DNA evidence are left untested. So it's an intimate look at this issue and its consequences. So
both of these sound so interesting. We want to have them both on the show to talk about.
Get us in touch with
Please, because we would love to have them
on,
too.
It's a real range. Exactly.
Yeah. And, okay. This is great. Yeah, we definitely want
to. But I will say that, what sort of unites such disparate films that they work on is the element of social justice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, as you well know, Prison Dogs is not just about cute puppies.
Not at all.
It really... What inspired them to even tell the story in the first place was just, how sky high prison recidivism is and just thinking, what are some of the ways to have prison reform and how can we give second chances? Are there programs in place where people are being given a second chance, and this is one of the paths towards sort of rehabilitation and giving back to society? So that, I would say, is really what unites their films is the aspect of social justice.
And back to Prison Dogs for a minute. This project or this plan that exists, is it in all prisons across the country or
a
very select few?
It's in about five or six.
That was
a very conscious decision by Gloria to not overextend and lose the incredibly high level of quality.
That makes sense.
Got it. So how does a prison itself get chosen? How does the prison get chosen as the one that they will bring this program to?
That I do not know the answer to. Tracy might know. I'm sure that they are vetted very carefully. I think also they've done work in women's prisons, with explosive detective canines. So... I think Gloria, Puppies Behind Bars is in New York City, and the prisons are in the New York area and New Jersey, so that may have a lot to do with it. But the one that was filmed for Prison Dogs is in Fishkill, New York.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's in New York. Okay.
Are you both East Coast?
But I also will say, and this is really interesting to me, the part of why, you know, you might say, well, wait a minute, you know, this inmate was in prison for murder. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a good puppy raiser. But as it turns out, if they're serving really long sentences, then they will be able to have the continuity of raising a puppy for 2 to 3 years. So I thought that was really fascinating.
That is so interesting. Wow. And then have they done any studies to show, you know, how successful the program is and things like that, or not yet?
They haven't done any before. Yeah, I don't think they do formal studies. I think it's too hard to be statistically accurate, actually.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And too many variables. Yeah.
So again, we're talking with Jennifer Mirsky. She's the impact producer, and Tracy. And am I saying this right? Penny Cuick? Is that right?
It's actually Penny Cook.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Penny Cook. Okay.
That's easier. And they are involved in the Prison Dogs film. And so can you tell us also, I'm sure that there are people that want to get involved, and how can they help out, you know, in any way?
With Prison Dogs, Puppies Behind Bars, they have a website and they're always looking for contributions. They are totally donation funded. There's no federal dollars going to this program. You can name a dog for a donation. You can, and that allows you to follow the dog and get updates about what's going on with the dog. So that's probably the most important thing. But then also, you know, watch the video, Prison Dogs film.com, and make sure that the conversation continues about veterans with PTSD. It is not a life sentence. And I think that's probably the most important thing, is that options are still available for treatment.
And are there any places or that you are aware of about veterans who maybe aren't part of this package here, but who might be able to get other dogs trained to help them with PTSD?
You know, there are. There's a lot of different programs out there, some better than others. I think it's important to check what's in your area, and as soon as you kind of identify a program that you might be interested in, talk to the VA psychiatrist. My psychiatrist is the one who recommended Puppies Behind Bars, and they're a veteran who had, you know, kind of presented it to him, and he did the research and he found out about it and he was like all about it. So I think it's important to talk with other veterans and other mental health providers within your community to find out what's in your community. Puppies Behind Bars will fly you out to New York to get a dog.
Oh,
it's great. Not restricted. If you're a veteran from California and you're interested in a service dog, they will fly out to meet you. They will bring you out to New York for the training. All expenses will be paid by the organization. So that this program is an option for anyone in the country.
Uh-huh.
But if you're interested in, you know, something local, definitely reach out to the community that you're in and find out about that organization.
And does Puppies Behind Bars, is it only working with PTSD or other traumas or issues?
It only works with PTSD.
Okay. Okay, so, I was just curious.
And so the qualifications are PTSD or military sexual trauma in order to get a dog.
Uh-huh. This is fantastic.
Gosh, I could think of so many ways dogs could be helpful with depression.
Yeah.
With anxiety.
Yes.
All these. Yeah, wow.
That's my Prozac. My dog Moose is my Prozac.
And my kitties are my
Exactly.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so what have we not covered that you do want to share with our audience? We still have a few more minutes.
Just really that Tracy really kind of said it, in terms of, you know, people who want to get involved with this, you know, if they can volunteer for Puppies Behind Bars and help socialize these dogs, and that's one of the great things that people can do. But really, we're just hoping that people will go to prisondogsfilm.com and watch the film. Mm-hmm. It's like an hour and 15 minutes, and it's really moving. And we hope that they will check us out on social media, on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram at Prison Dogs Film. And it's just wonderful that way, because regardless of where they live in the country, then we can have a discussion with them between the filmmakers and the audience. So we're really grateful to have that opportunity.
We're so blessed to have you both.
Oh,
and I actually heard you on a radio show. So that makes me feel good, because it makes me feel like, okay, the word is spreading, you know? So we're really so grateful to have you both on. And thank you so much for, all your inspiration. This is just wonderful.
Absolutely.
Thank you for having us. Thank you both so much.
Yes. And keep in touch with us, because we love, what you both are doing, for the future. So we'd love to hear more about it.
Absolutely. That sounds wonderful.
Okay. Have a good day.
Bye.
Have a great day. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Wow. That was just so amazing.
Bye.
Bye. Oh my goodness. so impressive.
I feel like I just love what this whole thing stands for. I mean, it's just so, and you could hear the healing in Tracy's voice. You know what I mean?
Like, I can't believe that this dog knows how to read when there's an anxiety attack coming on, or a panic attack. That is amazing.
And I wonder how they teach that. That's what I want to know. You know what I mean? Because it's like, if a prisoner or an inmate doesn't have anxiety, how do they teach that? It's really cool.
Oh, we should have asked that question.
I know, right? So many more questions. I'll be thinking about this all night.
Oh, I know. All night we'll go, we didn't ask that question or that question. But yeah. Oh my God, they were great. Next week we have, actually, this is a dear colleague of mine who's going to be coming on the show, Dr. Matthew Torrington. He is... I'm going to call him a world-renowned addiction specialist, but because he's just the coolest guy. So when I worked out at Seasons Recovery Center a while back, he was the medical director at the place.
Oh.
And you know how they talk about addiction and all the relapse rates and all this stuff. This guy he's really good. I mean, people worked with him, they got better.
Wow.
And they stayed better.
That's great.
Yes. So he's going to come and tell us about, how the brain is wired and what happens with different medications and drugs and how they interface with one another and the changes that occur and how long one needs to actually have the brain recalibrate after being addicted to certain substances.
Fascinating.
So we can totally pick his brain on all of that stuff.
I love hearing about the chemistry part of it too. Because
that is so.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
And especially right now with the world, with what they're saying, that opiate addiction is out of control.
Yes,
it's absolutely out of control.
Yes.
And a lot of opiates are really inexpensive and easy to get, and so people are just getting addicted left and right. It's really a tragedy.
It's terrifying. Well, good. We'll have him on and hopefully give some insight, to our listeners and things like that. Be great.
Absolutely. So, so if you didn't catch all of today's show, we were talking with Tracy Pennycook and Jennifer Minsky, who are very relevant to the film PrisonDogsFilm.com, and you can go to their website so that you can get... take a look at that.
Sure.
So interesting.
Fantastic. And then you can always visit us. We have an Instagram up at Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly. And our website is docandtherapist.com. And you can send us emails anytime, docandtherapist@gmail.com. And on Twitter at DocTherapist1.
And if anybody remembers any of that, I'd be very impressed.
Very impressed. Very impressed.
And remember, Kelly is with an I, not a Y.
Yes, very good.
I hate it that Siri, every time I'm sending you a note,
I know,
she
it comes with
Kelly. And I figure, I hope you won't be offended sometimes if I'm driving and I just don't correct it.
You know what? One time my dad wrote me a letter with a Y. There was no Siri involved. He just wrote it with a Y. And I was like laughing so hard. I'm like, Dad, what are you doing? He's like, I'm sorry. I have a client who spelled it with a Y. Like, it's just so funny. So I'm normal. Don't worry. It's really funny.
That is really funny. All right, all. Thank you so much for supporting our show, for listening.
Yes.
We love you. Have a great week.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.